Welcome to the Florida Roundup. It's the statewide edition. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Florida cities are suing the state and the governor over guns. That leads the roundup this Friday. Now, last month, the Florida legislature sent a gun control bill to Governor Rick Scott, and the governor, of course, signed it 2 days later. That legislation, well, it raises the legal age for buying a gun in the state to 21. It requires a 3-day waiting period for gun purchases, and it also enables school personnel to carry a gun on campus. The law also includes provisions to prevent a mentally ill or violent person from buying or possessing a weapon. Major legislation in Florida on this issue of guns, the most major really in a couple of decades. Still, though, Tallahassee mayor and Democratic gubernatorial candidate Andrew Gillum says the new gun law doesn't go far enough.
We still have not addressed high-capacity magazines. We still have not addressed strengthening the background checks, closing the gun show loophole, making sure that individuals with domestic violence records and histories aren't able to access these guns. And finally, I think we've got to address assault weapons.
Now, 10 South Florida cities this week sued Florida leaders, including Governor Rick Scott and Attorney General Pam Bondi. The cities want the ability to pass their own local gun regulations, something lawmakers blocked them from doing in a so-called preemption law that passed 7 years ago. The cities want that law overturned, and more local governments like Tampa and Orlando, in fact, may join them. But for now, Melissa, mayors and other local leaders face fines and even removal from office if their municipalities pass their own local gun ordinances.
That's right, Tom. Now, the Scott administration in the past had sued the federal government, fighting the federal ban on handgun sales to anyone under the age of 21. It's brought up so many questions here in Florida and in other states. Should states make gun policy? Or should that be the rule of local governments? What constitutes home rule? Does the federal government have the final say? In so many ways on this question, Florida is a red state and a blue state. And how people view guns and the Second Amendment is just one of the ways that we see the divide. And that's how we're going to begin the hour, taking your calls now on the Florida Roundup and talking these red state, blue state issues with two guests. They're two politicos who know a little something about this. Former Congressman David Jolly, a Republican, and former Congressman Patrick Murphy, a Democrat. They're touring the state right now and even other parts of the country talking about political polarization. Congressman Jolly and Murphy, a pleasure to have you both on the Florida Roundup.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be with you.
And here's our question to callers. Who do you think should make gun policy here in Florida? Should local governments get to create their own laws about this or not? Give us a call as we begin the hour, 305-995-1800. David Jolly, let's begin with you. You and your Democratic counterpart, Patrick Murphy, going around the state, talking on college campuses and other places about all of these issues. And we'll get into all of this over the hour with you. But first, let me get your reaction to this move from 10 South Florida cities suing Florida leaders. They want to be able to pass their own local gun regulations. Where do you stand on that? And how do you see this divide shaping up in Florida?
Sure. I think it's fantastic that these local communities are doing that. Listen, firearms and Second Amendment rights have certain constitutional tests that is ultimately a question for the courts. But in terms of who regulates or legislates them within those constitutional bounds, if a local community wishes to do that and to lead on more responsible gun restrictions within their jurisdiction, I think they should have the ability to do that. Tallahassee, unfortunately, has been walking away from the notion of local control and walking away from the notion of independence of municipalities throughout the state. I hope these municipalities are successful in their litigation against the state.
But haven't we seen local municipalities, Congressman, like Chicago and Washington, D.C., try this in the past and fail at the court level?
Well, I think the issue is a constitutional one, right? If there are restrictions placed on firearm ownership, whether by a Congress at the federal level or state or local, if it violates what the federal courts believe are Second Amendment protections, that's where you see them invalidated.
All right. Patrick Murphy, Tom mentioned the whole home rule argument. As Congressman Jolly said, the legislature has sort of weakened home rule powers of Florida cities over the last 10 years or so. Should these municipalities have the home rule authority?
You know, I think we should probably broaden this a little bit, because the truth is this has been a debate that's been, you know, sort of going on in our country since the beginning. It was local, state versus federal government. Who's bigger? Who's more powerful? Guns is obviously the topic of today, but you can make this argument for many different topics, and who is going to have the sort of last word. And I don't think we will. I think it will continue to evolve. Obviously, in this particular case, you can see the politics of this, that not to point a finger, but clearly the Republicans are trying to prevent democratically held urban centers, especially, from enacting their own gun laws. And I wouldn't be surprised if you start to see the federal government do more and more of that. The problem is, of course, when the federal government is not acting for anything, right? We have a Congress that is completely, you know, gridlocked, an administration that can't get out of their own way. So what are we supposed to do? Sit around and wait? No. Local governments have to step up to the plate and prevent these tragedies.
But when it comes to gun laws, the federal government did act regarding handgun purchases, legal handgun purchases you have to be 21 years and older to purchase. That's the federal law. The state of Florida sued over that, joined 21, I think, other states suing right. The federal government, saying, well, it ought to be have 18, 19, and 20-year-olds. To be able to do it. So you did have federal action, and the state of Florida went after the state, went after the government.
Exactly. And I, you know, I don't think you ever have the final answer to this. I think this will continue to go round and round. And you've seen federal government put other, you know, standards, no, you know, automatic weapons. I don't think I can go out and buy a bazooka today. You know, there's certain mm-hmm. standards and limits they do put on this. I think it'd be great for the federal government and the Congress to act. Congressman Jolly and I have been talking about this on our tour, in fact, of you know, some of the measures that we wish we could see. Congressman Jolly took the lead as a Republican in the Congress to try to pass legislation called, you know, No Fly, No Buy. I'll let him talk about mm-hmm. it more. But it was blocked for political reasons. And that's the nonsense that's going on in D.C. right now, because the members will tell you behind closed doors that they want to do something, but none of them have the courage.
And they won't do it. Yeah, but now that you're both out of Congress, you're talking about these issues publicly. I'm sure when you were in the Congress, you didn't agree on every issue, but you both seem to agree on certain factors that are keeping the parties polarized, keeping voters divided. David Jolly, tell us this no-fly, no-buy legislation that you put up but didn't make it through the process. Was that one example of what you're getting at? The middle-of-the-road solutions that you felt like a lot of legislators on Capitol Hill would have signed on to if they felt that they maybe could have done so politically, but they just were afraid to sign on to it?
That's right. It's a good example, as is what we're watching after Parkland and seeing the parties fail to reach consensus. I introduced legislation after the Pulse nightclub. Many will remember the Democrats had a sit-in in the House of Representatives with a very reasonable proposal that if you're not allowed to board an airplane, you shouldn't be able to buy a firearm. And there was one deficiency that I saw in that bill that I thought was preventing its passage, and that was there was no due process provision if you were denied the right to purchase a firearm. I do believe if you're denied the right to purchase a firearm, the government has a responsibility to tell you why, and you should have due process protections. So it was a compromise bill, but it ultimately went nowhere. And what Patrick and I talk about is how the structural problems that we have allowed to be created in the past 20 years, from supermajority districts to a closed primary system to the influence of big money, it has so insulated members on both sides of the aisle to give voice only to their own partisan constituencies, that the moment you begin to compromise, you actually get punished at the ballot box. The voters across Florida want universal and comprehensive background checks, and they want greater restrictions on assault weapons. But the party's allegiances are too far to one side or to the other to ever see that enacted.
That's Republican former congressman from Florida, David Jolly, along with us. Former Democratic congressman Patrick Murphy is also with us here on the Florida Roundup. You can join us, 800-743-800 number, Melissa. It's the 305
right.
number. I'm sorry. Red state, blue state here. I got to get my phone numbers right. 305-995-1800. That phone number will ring you into our system. 305-995-1800. I want to ask Congressman Jolly and Congressman Murphy, and Pat, we'll start with you, this idea of local gun legislation, local gun ordinance, because I want to bring it down again to this firearm issue because it is fresh and it has been polarizing in the past. But we did see the state legislature for the first time in 20 years pass really meaningful gun restrictions by limiting the sale of long guns, rifles to folks who are 21 years or older, among other types of steps, a three-day waiting period and whatnot. And now we're in the election cycle. Congressman Jolly's point with gerrymandering districts and closed primaries, do you anticipate to see a reaction at the ballot box to the gun restriction legislation that the Republican legislature here in Florida approved and the Florida governor signed?
You know, I think we have to approach this in two different conversations. Number one is the policy itself, and then two is the politics around it. You start off with the policy. You and I and David can, you know, and the listeners and callers can have this debate on whether those, you know, measures are really going to prevent future, you know, tragedies like we saw in Parkland and around the country. It was a baby step. There's no doubt about it. There's a lot of measures that were not taken, that were not taken up. This was, you know, a very small measure. That I don't think is really going to prevent another Parkland from happening. You look at the politics of it, and this is going to give Republicans a chance to say, hey, look, and Rick Scott, as he, you know, announces for Senate next week, right, is going to be able to say, look what I did. You know, all you kids out there, come support me. I got something done in this Republican, you know, legislature we have here. If for nothing else, it will muddy the waters on that issue. And that's maybe just the pessimist, you know, jaded politician now saying that. But that's the reality of what's going to happen here with the politics. So I think a lot of the students, I was speaking to a Democratic club last night. In fact, they see through a lot of this. A lot of the student groups I've spoken with recently see through this as nonsense policy. They want more. And that puts the Democrats, of course, in a tough position. Do you vote for this small measure, or do you wait till the perfect measure comes along?
How about you, Patrick Murphy? What about you, Patrick?
Congressman Jolly.
Yeah, so I think the Republicans in Tallahassee went as far as they could without getting significant backlash from their own base. And listen, we saw the NRA really hit Republicans pretty hard in Tallahassee. I think the anxiety and concern of a lot of Floridians is you want to recognize that there were incremental reforms made, but they certainly don't go as far as where the consensus across the state is. At the end of the day, I think this issue and the failure to see action by Republicans will energize the left. We're seeing that today. And I think those independent voters, look, they typically take a snapshot come November and say, do I think we're going in the right direction or the wrong direction? And on this issue, I think a lot of Floridians are going to say we're going in the wrong direction under Republican leadership in Tallahassee and Washington.
All right, let's go to some calls now here on the Florida Roundup. 305-995-1800. Susan in Cape Coral has a question about gun sales. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. You know, I live in it's almost a small town, but it's a big city. We've got about 180,000 people living here, but we're on a peninsula. We're not on traffic, so we don't see a lot of people coming in and out of our town. Yet, as soon as I drive into our city on the main bridge, there's a big gun store. And on another main street, there's another brand-new shooting range. And I know that there's many people that, individuals that have licenses to sell guns in my community. The reporting that isn't being done, that's not being sent to our central location in the U.S. government to track gun sales, I'm concerned about the number of gun stores and gun shows and individuals that sell guns without reporting or doing background checks. And yet, we are unable to limit the number of gun stores because of this law that was passed 7 years ago.
Okay, thanks, Susan. Congressman Murphy, that's the type of limitation on Second Amendment rights that keeps coming up again and again.
Mm-hmm. What, to Susan's point, this would be analogous to you and I being able to go to our uncle's house and getting a driver's license, and or being able to go to any sort of random store down the road to get a driver's license. There are very little controls, and there are huge loopholes with gun shows, with family trades of weapons, that sort of thing. So I think the caller is exactly right. The Congress has intentionally kept these loopholes. They have intentionally avoided leaning into this because of the politics around it. If there was a blind secret ballot on measures like this, I can almost promise you that these things would pass, that the Congress, and I don't even want to weigh into the state legislature, but at least in the Congress, and my Republican and Democratic friends would want to have more, at least, controls for people that are going to buy weapons, that they have a simple background check, that they've been through some simple training, some basic measures. And that's, I don't think, an infringement necessarily in today's world on your Second Amendment rights. You can get a weapon, just go through the basic training.
Let's go to a call in Miami. Fred has been holding on line two. Fred, go ahead. You are on the radio.
There can be plenty of discussion about whether private ownership of guns is a terrible idea, or it's okay, or it's a really good idea. But the references to the Second Amendment really don't come into this at all. The Second Amendment essentially no longer exists in this country. The Second Amendment makes clear that its purpose was for late 18th century notions of civil defense, which were supposed to be enacted by availability of militias. People could join militias under certain circumstances, and to do that, they had to have what the Second Amendment calls arms.
Fred, let me ask
you. In the late 18th century, arms were guns.
Right.
They're not. What militias have to do is confront either outside forces
sure.
or the force of the federal
sure.
government.
Fred, let me just ask you.
No handguns or assault weapons will do that.
Using your rationale, the First Amendment, which is something that Melissa and I are certainly familiar with, the freedom of the press, you had to have a physical printing plant back in the 1780s when the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, was written. Now it's a smartphone in your pocket and a Wi-Fi or a wireless connection. So, does the First Amendment no longer exist?
Well, and he's
also
getting to the whole idea of the language of the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia. The more recent Heller decision, strong supporters of the Second Amendment, Congressman Jolly, will point to the Heller decision as, making that argument null and void, that that their Second Amendment rights are not to be tampered with. And so, but as your counterpart, Patrick Murphy, just pointed out, one of the reasons both of you are barnstorming the state is these arguments tend to get bogged down in these absolutist positions on either side all the time. And there's no sort of consensus for any kind of meaningful reform. Do you feel that you're more effective outside the Congress than in it when you try to get some progress going on these issues?
I don't know if that means we were ineffective in Congress or not.
I'm glad you laughed first, David. I was holding my nerve.
Patrick and I joke we may have lost our seats in Congress, but we haven't lost our voices. And frankly, yeah. I don't think people across the state of Florida have either. But this debate over whether or not the Second Amendment has survived or not, look, we saw John Paul Stevens, retired Supreme yeah. Court Justice, recently say it should be repealed. What I would say is the courts have relied on it continuously as one that does protect certain constitutional rights to own a firearm. But what I like about the pretext of that call was we can debate whether or not more guns or less guns are better, and I think everybody has a strong opinion on it. What we do not have today that I think is a 100% issue.
Real quick, Congressman.
We should have both universal and comprehensive. Every gun transaction, and we should know exactly
we'll
what's
talk
in your
more
background.
About that. Former Republican Congressman David Jolly, former Democratic Congressman Patrick Murphy, and your phone calls as the statewide Florida Roundup continues.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup, our statewide edition this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. With midterm elections approaching, Republican candidates starting to feel a bit of some of the effects of having a Republican president with really volatile approval ratings. The Political Florida shared a story this week, Melissa, of Republican Congressman Vern Buchanan. His district includes Bradenton and Sarasota. He's running for his seventh term in Congress. He's also running television ads earlier than usual after his son James Buchanan lost a special election to the Florida House back in February in an area that strongly favored Donald Trump back in 2016. So how fast some of these colors change in the swing state of Florida. Democrats see a blue wave coming in November as President Trump's approval ratings kind of flounder and are pretty volatile here.
Yeah, that's right, Tom. And they point to districts like that special election in Florida and a few other ones around the country. Now, whether that will prove out, well, it remains to be seen. At the same time, former Miami Beach mayor and Democratic gubernatorial candidate here in Florida, Philip Levine, he says President Donald Trump has worked too often to divide the country instead of bringing it together.
And what he said, Melissa, was that everywhere he goes as he's running for governor, that he hears from people who want fresh water, better paying jobs, health care, affordable housing. He says they all want the same thing, and the people are trying to kind of separate Floridians are Americans, and yeah. His campaign is trying to bring those issues together.
Right. But here's the question, not only for the country, but for the state of Florida, is there coming together?
Right.
We continue now with our guests for the hour, both former Florida congressmen. They were on opposing sides of the aisle in Washington, but now they've teamed up. Republican David Jolly and Democrat Patrick Murphy are on a statewide tour hitting college campuses and other town halls around Florida to explain why they know from personal experience that gridlock rules Washington. They want to show audiences, though, that bipartisanship is possible. Give us a call about the gridlock in Washington and what you'd like to see our politicians do to try to address it here on the Roundup at 305-995-1800. Congressman Patrick Murphy, you and your counterpart David Jolly, you're going around, in particular, on college campuses. Why college campuses? Why not go after, say, older voters? They're more likely to show up on Election Day. You're really stressing the millennial and youth vote. Why is that?
Well, the truth is we want anybody and everybody. It happens to be on college campuses because they are great venues. They have, you know, good auditoriums. They have good parking and security, et cetera. So that's really who, quite frankly, has been reaching out to us, offering us these venues. We haven't really tried to exclude any groups. So we want a diverse group of people. And I'll tell you, I think back to some of the schools we went to, UCF in particular. I mean, that audience was average age was over 55, 60, I'd say. Mm. Of course, you had a group of students, but we're attracting folks from all over the community in these events. But look, to your point, there's a moment in history and most generations that change politics and change a generation, whether that's the civil rights movement, whether that's women's voting rights, whether that was after Vietnam War. And you don't know it exactly when it happens, but I'd venture out to say that this Parkland shooting was a moment that will arguably get millennials to the ballot box, that will get Generation Z voters out there to not only show their voice, but see results from the 2018 elections and then going forward 2020. And I sure hope that this gets them active.
What about you, David Jolly?
Yeah, the reason we go to college campuses is free rent. But we are inviting a lot of people, and here's why. They are very academic issues, and it's not worth really belaboring. But, you know, Patrick often talks about how only 15% of voters decide 90% of the Congress, and that's because we have a closed primary system with supermajority gerrymandered districts. And so what we're talking about is how voters can lead ballot initiatives in Florida and across the country to change state constitutions to begin to reward members of Congress and members of the legislature that do work across the aisle. Because right now, if you work across the aisle, you get primaried in your own district for not being a good enough partisan. We want to change that.
So how big of a role does Florida play in this gridlock in both of your experiences? We have in Florida 16 Republican congressmen. We have 11 Democratic congressmen. We have one Republican U.S. senator. We have one Democratic U.S. senator. Mm-hmm. I mean, you mix this together and, you know, it is a red state, blue state, a swing state, a purple state.
And most of those districts, though, are protected. You know, Florida is a success story, but also a bit of an experiment right now. We saw through a lot of hard work, probably of many listeners, the implementation of the Fair Districts Amendment mm-hmm. that required greater geographic compactness in how we draw district lines. One of the either unintended or intended consequences is it jeopardized four or five of your most centrist members of Congress, right? Myself, Patrick, Gwen Graham, Carlos Curbelo, Ileana Ross-Leighton, and instead really created stronger partisan districts for many people. So we're having a conversation about that. Should we have geography plus electoral competitiveness require or try to draw as many 50-50 districts as possible? Florida's a testbed for that right now.
Interesting. Patrick Murphy, that is something I don't think got a lot of attention. The whole point of fair districting was to reduce gerrymandered districts and political polarization. I guess no good deed goes unpunished, right? It sounds
like. That's what
like.
It appears.
Yeah.
And if you dive down a little deeper into the state houses, state seats, House and Senate, you see it's almost a supermajority Republican in both chambers. And when you look at Florida, just based on registration, you have a slight edge of more registered Democrats than Republicans.
Right.
So if you were to look at that and then go even a step further than the fact that independents can't even vote in primaries, where you have about one third of Florida voters that aren't even allowed to vote and show their voice in a primary.
Well, some of the fastest growing party membership,
2-1
is
faster
none
than
at
the
all.
Other two, right?
NPA, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think it's a pretty strong argument that you should open up primaries to allow independents to have a voice, along with, and all this must start with more fair districts. You know, whether you have an independent panel that draws them, whether you have a computer draw, somehow to not only have geographic compactness, but districts that have, say, one third Republican, one third Democrat, one third, independent, third. And that, I think, would help bring the politicians together to find compromise and actually get things
done.
And
when you both go around and talk about these issues, what type of reception are you getting? Do people say they're over the two-party system, that they think it's reached the end of its usefulness or not? Congressman Jolly.
I think we hear a lot of people talk about is now the time for a third party. And I think people across the country are asking that question. Patrick and I are very careful in these events. This is not a tour about the president or the Congress. But the reality is we would not be talking about bipartisanship and the need for reforms if, as a country, we weren't living through today's very divided politics. And so we do have a lot of people say is now the time for a third party. I think with sufficient financing behind it, we could see a third-party success. How long that success would last would be a longer question, but this also goes then to the issue of campaign finance. A third party without resources to compete with the major parties likely couldn't get off the ground.
The Constitutional Revision Commission here in Florida recently decided against kind of putting to the voters a proposal to open up primaries in the state of Florida. So Florida remains a closed primary state. I imagine both of you would endorse an open primary state. Is that correct? Fair to say, Congressman Murphy?
I would. I don't want to speak for David.
Congressman Jolly?
I certainly would. And the good news here is if you believe in an open primary, there are activities now to organize signatures that even though the CRC shut down the option, we still might see a voter-driven
right.
constitutional amendment question in 2020.
So what is the effect of that? What could be the effect of that with no changes to districting?
Well, if you just did that, then all of a sudden the elected officials or the candidates running for office would know that there's tens of thousands of more people, respectively, in that district that are potentially going to show up to vote for them. So instead of just appealing to that very, very narrow 15% base, which is probably around 30,000 people, that I can tell you the magazines they read, I can tell you the websites they go to, I can tell you when and where they were born and how many kids they have and all that, and come with a very specific message for each of them based on maybe it's guns, maybe it's the environment, choice, whatever that issue is. But all of a sudden, now you have 10, 20, 30,000 more people, perhaps, to appeal to, and you're going to see that message change a little bit.
A different approach. And let me ask both of you as a follow-up. And a minute ago, you mentioned how a third party has a hard time because of all these structural barriers, including fundraising. When you were both in Congress, how much time did you have to spend raising money as opposed to working on policy issues?
Way too much.
How much?
Go ahead, David.
I will tell you, one of the two major parties actually had an orientation slide in their new member packet. This was a few years back, that it said you're expected to spend 20 to 30 hours a week raising money or prospecting. And that is when you are in session in Washington, D.C. It is, which is why I introduced legislation to prohibit members of Congress from directly soliciting money. We don't let judges do it. And in Tallahassee, when they're in session, they're not allowed to directly raise money.
So would you just go? I've heard that you would have to go into a room, a call center room, and just dial for dollars all day. Is that true? Is that what you would do?
It is. It's illegal to make fundraising calls from your government office. So there's a reason you don't see members of Congress at breakfast, lunch, or dinner actually in the Capitol, because they're across the street raising money.
So Andrew, do you see that as evidence of a broken system? I think both of you are on the same page about that. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think there's a really strong argument that gerrymandering is the single biggest problem for the gridlock in our country, but you can make a really good argument that money is. And it's not just breakfast, lunch, dinner. When we're supposed to be in a financial services committee hearing, in a commerce committee, whatever the committee is that you're on, zoom out there on C-SPAN and take a look how many people are in that committee room. Maybe 3-4 people max, because members of Congress are sitting in their Republican or Democratic call rooms begging for money.
305-995-1800 is the phone number statewide to speak with Republican Congressman David Jolly, former congressman from Tampa Bay area, and former Democratic congressman from the Palm Beach area, Patrick Murphy, here on the Florida Roundup. Love to hear from NPA registered voters here and how they feel part or not part of the decision process as we approach primary season here. No party affiliate. Have you registered to vote? Have you switched registrations, for instance, from one party to the next, from one election to the next, to try to, you know, vote in one particular race that's heated or that you have a strong feeling to compared to another? Let us know. Hear those experiences.
And Tom, I think that the latest polling on that showed that here in Florida, the number of MPAs is now a bigger chunk of the electorate than the number of registered Republicans or registered Democrats.
Yeah, as a share of voters, I think that's right.
As a share of voters. And so that's a big group of voters that are not being well served by the system we have in place now, which I think is why Congressman Jolly and Murphy are getting traction with this. And by the way, you're not just touring Florida, Congressman Jolly. You're going to around the country, too, aren't you?
We sure are. We've had the opportunity to go to Georgetown. We were scheduled for Harvard, got snowed out. I think next week, in addition to Jacksonville, we're back in Washington, and then at Tufts University. We're going to Chicago with David Axelrod, and I think there's going to be a West Coast swing in the future as well.
When I listen to that, Congressman Jolly, you know what I hear? I hear a lot of blue states, a lot of blue areas in that.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, right?
Well, you know what has been, I think, surprising to me personally? Patrick and I joke, we're not talking about scandal. This isn't fire and fury. Frankly, a lot of this is boring stuff most of us slept through in high school civics. But the turnout reflects that people are hungry now for something different, that we know whichever side you're on, there are things that are broken, and it's about how do we fix this and get past our current politics.
The time that both of you spent in Washington, can you point to a moment or give us a sense of when compromise worked or how compromise worked for you and most importantly, I suppose, for your constituents? Congressman Murphy?
Sure. I'll give two clear examples. One is right after a tragedy. Anytime there's an incident, whatever that might be, there's a moment, maybe it's a day, maybe it's 2 days, usually not much longer than that, where people at least get the sense that, hey, we're going to work together for our country. We are going to come together. Unfortunately, that sentiment leaves very quickly. The real concrete example I can point to, though, and one of the things that I always point to why the gridlock in D.C. is so bad, item number 6 on my list of 7, are cameras in committee rooms. On the surface, I'd say, heck yeah, I want to see what my legislator's doing. I want to hear what they're saying. No one's hiding from me. But what's happened is we've turned our elected officials into actors and actresses. They're putting a show on for that camera to appeal to that 15% that are going to vote. So I was on the Intelligence Committee, right? Very small room, no cell phones, no cameras, obviously, recording devices, anything else. It's all off the record, obviously, right? These are nation secrets. Well, guess what? When there's no cameras on, people get along. Some of the most partisan members of Congress down there in that room are friendly.
But could that have also been because it was national security? And you weren't talking about budgets necessarily. You were talking about national defense, national security, intelligence.
But we're talking about budgeting for those items, right? I mean, they're very big ticket items.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You take the social issues out, right? We're not talking about choice and, you know, right. some of the more controversial items. So maybe by nature protecting the country, you would get more consensus. But just the everyday dialogue before a meeting starts, people are getting along.
They're getting along. And then the camera, the red light goes on, and it's a different story. Yeah. And let me, a quick break. You're exactly. listening to the Florida Roundup Statewide Edition from Florida Public Radio. All right, David Jolly, one more question for you. I know this is sort of a hackneyed example people point to, but they think back to the era when Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill would argue all day and then go have a drink at night. And in the days when congressmen and senators actually lived in Washington most of the year, they would go to dinner parties with people from the opposing party or their kids' right. soccer games, and they would interact socially. And that really tended to help bridge this ideological divide in a way now that just seems completely not realistic. Districts come in for a few days. As you just pointed out, they spend most of their time in a room dialing for dollars. Then they fly back to the districts, and they're going back to the districts to speak only to their most fervent ideological supporters rather than the district at large. And so little things like that have contributed to, it seems to me, a sad state of affairs, because if you do socialize with someone from another party, it's a little harder to demonize them and think that they're, you know, doing horrible things for the country when instead they just see the world a little differently.
Well, that's right. And there's a joke in Congress. What does one member of Congress say to the other on Wednesday night? See you next week. And
wow.
it reflects what Sam Gibbons from the Tampa Bay area, who served for decades, once said, bipartisanship ended with the invention of the jet airplane, because you used to have members go to Washington and only come home maybe quarterly. The other evolution we've seen in modern politics is the introduction of mass media, both 24-hour news stations, but also the social media platforms. And what it has done, I worked for my predecessor, Bill Young, who was first elected in 1970. In 1970, we elected legislators that would go to Washington, do the job, and come home. We didn't get to see them on the nightly news. You only had three news programs, and rarely, if ever, did they speak of your member of Congress. Now, we have members of Congress whose greatest qualifications are media savvy and fundraising. And so the type of candidates that are recruited and succeed are very different than 50 years ago.
And not to sound too partisan, but think of this administration, who our president is picking to be, you know, major secretaries, and who he's surrounding himself with as TV personalities, as if all of a sudden that's some qualification for serious matters.
We've got a lot of calls on the line. Hold on. We'll get to them in the next segment. We want to hear from NPA registered voters. No party affiliate. Or did you switch party affiliates to vote in a closed primary because you felt strongly for or against a specific candidate? 305-995-1800 throughout the Sunshine State here from the Panhandle to the Peninsula. 305-995-1800. Two former congressmen from Florida are along with us. Red State, Blue State. Former Republican Congressman David Jolly is along with us, and former Democratic Congressman Patrick Murphy. Your phone calls coming up next, 305-995-1800, as you're listening to the Florida Roundup Statewide Edition from Florida Public Radio.
And welcome back to a very lively Florida Roundup this Friday, our statewide edition, as we continue our red state, blue state discussion with all of your calls now. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami, talking to two former congressmen, red state David Jolly, Republican from the Tampa Bay area, and blue state former Democratic Congressman Patrick Murphy, from Palm Beach County. Your phone calls 305-995-1800. Let's begin in Coral Springs with Claudia. Coral Springs and Claudia, you are on the radio. Go ahead, Claudia.
Hi, good afternoon. So I graduated from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas in the year 2000, and in my senior year, I was registered to vote. At the time, I chose no party affiliate. Mm-hmm. It stayed that way until the primaries leading up to the general election this past year. I wanted the honor to vote for Bernie Sanders. Mm. I am concerned, as a closed primary state, with those deadlines, it can be very difficult for new voters or people who haven't voted in a while to know the rules. As part of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas alumni, I'm going to make sure that our students are registered. I know they're pushing for getting the younger generations registered to vote, and we're going to make sure that they're aware of those deadlines, too, so that we can make a difference.
Yeah, in the state of Florida, if you're 16 or 17, you can pre-register to vote, as a matter of fact. But Claudia, let me ask you, you said you are an independent voter, so you didn't take part in the primary voting selection in the 2000, the 2004, the 2008, the 2012, the 2016 presidential elections, although in 2016 you did switch to Democrat to vote for Senator Bernie Sanders. Are you still a registered Democrat in the state of Florida?
I am, and again, it's only so that I can have a voice in the primaries, but my heart's still independent.
Interesting. Well, you know what, Patrick Murphy, I think earlier in the hour you said you thought this would be the generation that would move the country forward. What do you think about her comments, and in particular that she cast that vote, like a lot of young Americans did, for Bernie Sanders because she liked his message, but she still sees herself as politically independent?
Yeah, you know, it goes to a point that Tom made earlier, that you're seeing, I think, by 2-1, maybe even 3-1, the NPA, the independent party, is growing faster than Republicans or Democrats in the state of Florida. Some of that are Republicans and Democrats, changing over, but a lot of that is really from younger, newer voters who aren't identifying with either party. I think both parties have a real problem on their hands. Both are divided. You see it more with the Republican Party because they're in the majority, but Democrats have their own divide. Interesting that, Bernie Sanders voter is an independent. I mean, he was an independent, of course, had to, register as a Democrat, and, controversy in itself there. My Republican right. friends would consider Bernie Sanders a fire-breathing liberal. But the caller, I think Claudia said that she's an independent. So I think you're seeing, and you're seeing this with Trump supporters as well, not a lot of consistency there with President Trump, who is against trade all of a sudden, right? So you're seeing, I think, both parties sort of in a real evolution right now of what they stand for.
Of what they, where they are, sure. And lots of calls on this from all over Florida. It's our Florida Roundup this Friday with former Congressman David Jolly and Patrick Murphy, our guests for the full hour. Let's go now to Nicole. She's in Key Biscayne. Hey, Nicole. You're on the Florida Roundup.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
So, grew up in Miami my whole life from Key Biscayne. I've always considered myself a conservative voter. I tend to find myself now leaning towards more progressive views. I definitely will in 2020 vote for Bernie Sanders if he indeed does run, which I think he announced officially that he does plan on throwing his hat into the ring for this 2020 presidency.
And Nicole, what made you drift? What made you move to the left?
Definitely the situation in healthcare. I work in the healthcare field, and it's really embarrassing to have to deal with families and situations that they're in, and understanding that it's the number one priority always seems to be profit.
Okay, gotcha. Okay,
I
hear you.
It should not be that way.
So that motivated that voter, David Jolly, and in particular over to Bernie Sanders. How do you see that issue affecting Florida, where we still have not accepted a Medicaid expansion pool of money to cover working poor uninsured? And do you see that issue, as Nicole said, turning the state more in a blue direction this fall in the midterms? Will healthcare be a defining issue this fall for Florida or not?
I think it will be if Democrats choose to make it one, and they should, because go back to the fact, forget about the president right now. The Republican Congress just 1 year ago was trying to tinker with what do they do with Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and frankly, throughout that entire process, indicated to the American people that they're willing to remove this safety net. They're willing to remove some of these provisions that make healthcare more affordable and more accessible, and that's a real issue. Democrats have to decide going into November, what message are they going to deliver to voters? Is it about healthcare? Is it about the economy? Is it about Donald Trump? The energy's on their side, but they have to decide how they want to profile their party to the voters going into November.
Next call from Broward County, Chris in Cooper City. Chris, go ahead. You're on the radio statewide.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing. Go ahead.
So a little background on me. I have been a registered Republican since I first registered to vote when I got my driver's license at 16. I'm 38. And after the 2016 election, I switched parties to Democrat. And I just felt that the Republican Party in the Trumpian incarnation had drifted too far from the free trade and you know, Reaganist type, you know, of the past.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly didn't help that I'm, you know, socially, you know, more progressive. And it just felt like I totally agree with your panelists in that I would be completely open to an open primary so that MPA or, you know, Republican or Democrat could vote in whichever way they like. And one of the reasons that I switched to Democrat and not MPA is because I wanted the opportunity to be able to vote in primaries.
Was there a specific issue, though, that drove you to change that party affiliation?
I think it was just the overall tone that the Republican Party has, you know, exhibited in the last, you know, year or two.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the election, I actually voted for Hillary Clinton. I am not one of the Bernie Sanders people, although I thought, you know, Bernie did a great job. I'm a more centrist, which I feel like is slowly being, you know, is dwindling away.
Gotcha. Mm. Chris, thanks for your call here. Let me remind folks
Thank you.
Are listening to the Florida Roundup Statewide Edition from Florida Public Radio.
All right, let's go to Catherine in Jacksonville. Hey, Catherine, thanks for your call. Happy Friday. Go ahead.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. Yes, I've registered to vote since I was 18 years of age, and I registered at the time Democrat, and I can't remember exactly when I changed my affiliation, but I changed to independent, and I was notified by the city of Jacksonville that my party had changed to NPA because they had not met certain reporting requirements, and I was informed that I could change at any time and given a list of criteria that I must meet in order to change my voting registration.
Why'd you switch to independent, Catherine?
Because I couldn't align myself with either the Republican or the Democrat.
Sure, and so many feel the same way you do, but as you just pointed out, Patrick Murphy, very quickly, when people make that switch, they sort of get cut out of the process.
Exactly right. And that's a real problem because you have voters like this caller who's cut out of the primary process. So what do we expect her to do when the general election comes around? She's not going to feel like she had any say in the final two candidates and might not even vote in the general. So I believe it's suppressing the overall vote. When we're in a time where we need to be encouraging more people to vote, it's more important than ever that our democracy works, and that takes people's involvement.
You Congressman know, Jolly, I'm curious, as you look toward both the gerrymandering district issue and the closed primary issue, these are both really, frankly, dealt with at the state level, right? I mean, this is a Tallahassee issue. This is a state House and state Senate issue. With all due respect, this is not something coming from the U.S. Capitol and the U.S. House of Representatives, where you served and your colleague Patrick Murphy served. So the audience that you need to take up, not only in constituents, but is with the state lawmakers.
That's true, or voters at large. And this is a very important point, and it's also encouraging. Voters in the state of Florida can mobilize to change the state constitution and change the way we have primaries and change the way district lines are drawn. We can leave the legislators in Tallahassee behind. The good news is you're seeing voters across the country.
We got to leave it there,
begin
though.
Begin to do this.
Congressman David Jolly, Congressman Patrick Murphy along with us, Republican and Democrat, red state, blue state here on the Florida Roundup Statewide Edition.
Well, finally, this hour, Tom, it was an amazing find up here in Ponte Vedra Beach. A 48-foot section of a very old ship washed up on shore in Ponte Vedra last week. The hull is really well preserved, and it appears to be the remains of a sailing ship that dates back to the 1800s or maybe even before that, centuries old.
This is a really pretty cool find here, Melissa. Researchers from the St. Augustine Lighthouse Archaeological Maritime Program, They got there on the scene right away to document all of this. And, of course, as things are on the beach in Florida, right, it's already become a bit of a tourist attraction. Mm-hmm. The waves that brought it ashore could just as easily pull it back to the sea, of course. So the hall is now considered the property of the state of Florida. Researchers were given permission to start preserving the hall, and they're now working on a plan to move it. Now, it is not true that the State Department of Revenue is trying to go after the owners for back tourism taxes, though. That is not the case in this
No, regard. That's all made up. Yeah. Right. Fake news.
Yeah, exactly.
Go see it while you can, though. That's our show for today. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Gina Jordan and Kevin Mershart are producers.
Jason Zabka is our technical director, engineering help from WLRN's program director, Peter Mertz. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back next Friday. Have a great weekend.